already said it. Now? I got it. Good afternoon and welcome to Indie Media Live, one of the most progressive half hours on the radio, because we have no corporate sponsorship and no corporate control. That makes a big difference in bringing you the news. Hope you'll stay with us. I'm your host, Rebecca Ferris, and I'm here every Tuesday introducing you to people who are passionately involved in the issues and causes that directly affect you and your family. We have a great show for you today. Medea Benjamin is with us from Code Pink. Before we get to that, I want to remind you that you can always listen to this or any of the other great programming on WRIR at our live stream on WRIR.org. Indie Media Live will be rebroadcast tomorrow at 2:30, and we will also archive it at a link at our blog, indiemedialive.blogspot.com, so you can listen to the show over and over again. I want to bring you a couple of important event announcements. This Saturday, June the 4th, from 10 a.m. until 3:30 p.m., right here in Richmond, Energize, Virginia, will be here a citizen summit on offshore wind power. It'll take place at Center Stage, 600 East Grace Street. Activists and citizens will be coming together to map out how we can work together to bring clean energy and good jobs to Virginia in a way that will help transform the Commonwealth and maybe the world. Some of the sponsors are the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, Green Jobs Alliance, the Sierra Club, Southern Environmental Law Center. If you want to find out more about this event, www.bit.ly. On Saturday, June 11th, local activists and artists will hold a benefit concert to help rebuild African communities traumatized by genocide. The show will be held at First Unitarian Universalist Church, 1000 Blanton Avenue, and it will start at 7 p.m. The performance features well-known master drummers and percussionists playing African, Brazilian, and Caribbean rhythms. Hotel X will be there, Drums No Guns, and special guests will also be performing. This event is sponsored by the Richmond Peace Education Center, RPEC.org. And the Vegetarian Festival is coming again on June 18th. That will be on Saturday, June 18th at Bryan Park. Today, my guest, Medea Benjamin, is coming back to Indie Media Live. She is a human rights activist, an anti-war activist, an author. She has a master's degree in public health and economics. She spent over 20 years advocating for human rights all over the world. Medea spent 10 years in Latin America and Africa as an economist and nutritionist for such organizations as the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization and the World Health Organization. She lived in Cuba for 5 years. She's the author of 8 books, including Bridging the Global Gap, a handbook to linking citizens of the First and Third Worlds. Medea Benjamin and her husband, Kevin Danaher, co-founded Global Exchange, which is an organization dedicated to promoting fair trade practices where environmental concerns and fair wages for the production of goods take precedence over corporate profits. She has fought against sweatshops and, with Global Exchange, persuaded corporate giant Nike to investigate and monitor its overseas factories to ensure safe working environments and living wages. It was after the attacks on September 11th that Medea Benjamin's activism took on a different color, if you don't mind the pun. She co-founded Co-Pink Women for Peace, and that happened in 2002. Medea, thank you so much for being on Indie Media Live again.
Thanks for having me on.
When I heard the news about Egypt formally opening the Rafah border last week, you were the first person I thought of, because the last time you were on our show, you and a large delegation of people were trying to gain entrance to Gaza through the Rafah crossing, and at the very last minute you were denied.
Well, that's right. It was an event we organized called the Gaza Freedom March that ended up being about 1,300 people who gathered in Cairo with the purpose of driving through the Sinai to the Rafah border opening between Egypt and Gaza. And at that time, it was still under Mubarak. We had a taste of what that repression was like, with the police not only refusing to allow us to board our buses to go there, but refusing to allow us to even have a meeting, and bashing our heads in the very Tahrir Square when we tried to meet in an open space like that.
And so what were your reactions when you heard the news?
Well, it's very exciting, but it's still not enough. It's great that people from inside Gaza now have more of a chance to leave their country, but it's still a lot of restrictions. People can't go in through Egypt. They can't be reunited with their family, friends, and work possibilities in the West Bank. The Egyptians also are calling for visas for men over the age of 40 and under the age of 40, between 18 and 40. And there is still a lot of bureaucracy for people. And most importantly, it doesn't allow for trade. And I think what the people inside Gaza really need is to allow them to rebuild their businesses, to have normal commerce, to be able to send goods between not only Gaza and Egypt, but also through Israel.
Let's back up just a minute and help our listeners understand the relationship between Israel and Gaza, Gaza's significance, and kind of the background and the history of all of this. I'm not sure all of us understand that completely.
Well, yes, I think for your listeners to understand that in 2006, when the people of Gaza voted Hamas in, that's when the Israelis started clamping down, and they enforced a strict blockade starting in 2007. And the Egypt, under the rule of Hosni Mubarak, helped enforce that blockade by working with the Israelis. They prevented most Palestinians from leaving Gaza through the border with Egypt called Rafah. And many people inside Egypt were upset that Mubarak was working with the Israelis to keep the people of Gaza really imprisoned in this little strip of land. It's about 1.5 million people and has been known as the largest open-air prison in the world, meaning that people aren't allowed to go back and forth. They haven't been allowed to sell their goods outside of Gaza. They haven't been allowed to go to study abroad. And it has really crippled everything from commerce to just people's own personal ambitions. So one of the only ways that they could get goods in was through smuggling them through tunnels between Gaza and Egypt. And that was very dangerous. There were many people who died in those tunnels. And it was also meant that it was actually giving more control to Hamas because they had the franchise on who was able to control those tunnels and what would be charged. So this opening with Egypt is really a result of the revolution in Egypt itself. And as I said, is a very positive thing, but not enough.
One of the news reports that touched my heart so much said that many of the people from Gaza who were leaving when the border was open, we think about people going into Gaza, but people trying to leave Gaza were leaving for medical care. Could you talk to us about what the conditions are like in Gaza?
Well, they had deteriorated dramatically after the Israeli invasion called Operation Cast Lead that began in December of 2009, when the Israelis invaded in a way that was so brutal that it left 1,400 people dead and destroyed the economy of the Gaza Strip. Thousands of businesses were destroyed, just about every factory, and people were left without a way to to feed their families, take care of their communities, and the hospitals were also attacked. We visited right after the Israeli invasion and saw how the Israelis had bombed, literally, the cancer ward of one of the hospitals, the children's section of one of the hospitals. And so it became very difficult for people who needed medical treatment immediately to get the treatment they needed. And it has always been difficult for people to get out of Gaza and get the medical treatment they needed, either in Israel proper or in Egypt. So, yes, I think for people who are dependent on using the latest technology or getting the kind of medical treatment they can't get inside Gaza, this is a chance for them to have a lifeline. But, you know, they can't just go into Egypt and go in a hospital and get the treatment. They also have difficulty paying for it, and for many of them, it would be much easier to go to Israel instead of into Egypt.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Indie Media Live. I'm your host, Rebecca Ferris, and I'm having a conversation this morning with Medea Benjamin, human rights advocate, anti-war activist, and author. Medea, when I'm reading the newspapers and on the internet and I'm trying to find out about Gaza and Hamas, the terms are always used that Hamas seized Gaza. But a minute ago, you said that there was an election and Gaza was Hamas was democratically elected. Could you explain that?
Well, yes, Hamas was democratically elected in 2006. Then there was infighting between the two different factions of Hamas and Fatah that left Hamas in complete control of the Gaza Strip and Fatah in control of the West Bank. The infighting between the factions has caused a lot of hardship, and there was, as a result of the Arab Spring, an uprising among particularly the youth in the Palestinian youth, saying that they had enough of the infighting between Fatah and Hamas, and they wanted a reconciliation. And it is to the credit of Fatah and Hamas that they listened, and with the help of the new Egyptian government, brokered a unity agreement. Now, for most of the world, that was seen as a positive thing, that there could be then negotiations with Israel with a unified entity that was represented by Fatah, but Hamas would be a part of, not taking part in the negotiations, but actually being part of a unity government. Unfortunately, the Israelis, the Israeli government, has been adamant about not negotiating with a unified government, and even more unfortunate is the fact that the United States government has taken the same position. So while the rest of the world has celebrated the unity between the two Palestinian factions, Israel and the U.S. have not.
You mentioned a little while ago about the event last weekend. Regular listeners to Indie Media Live knew about that event, Move Over AIPAC. Could you explain to our listeners what AIPAC is, what the acronym stands for, and what happened at the event and the outcome of it?
Yes, there is a very strong lobby group in the United States. It's the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, and it is so strong that it really writes the legislation in this country that deals with Israel and Palestine and, to a large extent, even broader issues concerning the Middle East. And we feel that that lobby group is actually dangerous because it prevents a real peace process from moving forward. And that is dangerous for Palestinians, Israelis, and us in the United States. And this group has pretty much gone unchallenged. While there have been small protests that we have participated in over the years, this was the first time that actually a large coalition came together to challenge AIPAC and to challenge our representatives, to ask them, are you representing the best interests of the United States or are you representing the best interests of Israel? And those two do not necessarily coincide.
And how did the event go? You had over 100 organizations participating.
Yes, it was a great event in the sense that we had the first day a conference that was attended by hundreds of people, and the speakers included the premier experts in the United States on the Israel lobby. And then we had several days of protests after that, both outside the convention where AIPAC was meeting and inside the convention when Prime Minister Netanyahu was speaking, as well as when he spoke before a joint session of the U.S. Congress the Tuesday after the policy conference, when one of our people got inside and interrupted his speech there, calling out Israel for its war crimes and calling for human rights for Palestinians. So we were able to be on the inside, on the outside, and I think show a sense that AIPAC does not represent everybody in this country. But I think it was very unfortunate that President Obama decided to speak at AIPAC, even though he had been seen just a couple of days before as calling on Israel to negotiate on the basis of 67 borders. When he spoke before AIPAC, he really backed down quite a lot from that position. But I think just the fact that he chose to speak at AIPAC was very unfortunate because it gives AIPAC even more power. And I think at this moment, when we want to move in a different direction, what we need to do is lessen the power, not strengthen the power of AIPAC.
If it is important that the United States play the role of fair broker in this situation between the Palestinians and the Israelis, it is, as you say, very unfortunate that so much of the events of last week give the impression that the United States and its government are not fair brokers. The response of the Congress to Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech is an example of that, I think.
Well, that's right. And I don't think the U.S. can be a fair broker. We have year after year given Israel $3 billion of U.S. taxpayer money unconditionally. So even while the position of the U.S. administration has been that Israel shouldn't continue building these illegal settlements, we have not used our monetary power to even put some strings attached to that money. So I think around the world, the U.S. is recognized as being solely on the side of Israel, and there's no way that we can be a fair broker when we hold that kind of a position. And when Netanyahu went before Congress, it was shameful to see them jumping up and down every couple of minutes, giving him standing ovations 29 times, more standing ovations than President Obama got himself. And this around the world is just seen as people are wondering who is pulling the strings. Is Israel pulling the strings and the U.S. Congress are puppets, or is it the other way around? Scratching their heads and just wondering if our Congress indeed is representing the American people or representing the Israeli government.
After the member of Code Pink was able to peacefully disrupt Netanyahu's speech, he was talking about how wonderful democracy is and how great it is that we have the ability to protest our government. And indeed, our Constitution gives us the right to redress. But what happened to Ray right after she spoke out?
Well, yes, it's interesting, and it's good you put it in the context of when she spoke out, she was viciously attacked by other members of the audience, some of whom were still wearing their badges that showed that they had come from the AIPAC policy conference. And just as Netanyahu was saying, oh, isn't this wonderful that you can have this kind of a protest in a democracy, she was being mauled, assaulted, tossed around, and then so manhandled that she had to be taken to the hospital. And while she was at the hospital, she was arrested, and I was there and was told I could not, I had to leave the room and couldn't see her because she was then under guard by two armed policemen. So this is the way that a peaceful protester is treated in the great democracy here.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Indie Media Live. I'm Rebecca Ferris, and I'm talking with Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, a peace activist. Medea, how is Ray doing today? Is she doing okay?
She still has a lot of pain in her neck. In fact, she told me that she was making another doctor's appointment because it hasn't gotten better in these days. And, yes, she is shaken up. And not only Ray, there were five other people who peacefully disrupted inside the AIPAC conference. And all of them got mauled, especially one of the young women, an intern of ours at Code Pink, who is really not only bruised up but quite traumatized by the way that she was treated. People wondered why the individuals took it on themselves to attack peaceful protesters, and was this some kind of reflection of the violence that is perpetrated by the Israeli military, and the Israelis certainly seem to get away with it as well.
Medea, what is your idea in the last few minutes that we have as the way to peace in the Middle East, the road to peace in the Middle East? What are some of the ideas that you have about how to create peace there?
Well, what I certainly feel over the last week is that we cannot rely on this administration or this Congress to move us in the right direction. That more than ever, I feel that this is a grassroots kind of movement that has to swell up and join with people around the world, and of course the Palestinians and those in Israelis who are working for the human rights of all. And we have the power of the purse that we can use more and more as part of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement that is really taking off around the world. Boycotting Israeli products, and particularly those products that are made in settlements. And then there are creative actions like the upcoming flotilla that will be leaving in the third week of June, trying to make its way from a European port to Gaza. The last time, a year ago, the boats were intercepted by the Israeli military in international waters, where they used incredible force and killed nine people. So this is a time for us to support the next flotilla that I myself will be going on, and I feel very privileged to be one of the people that will be on this boat. This will be a U.S. boat, and we will be together with boats from other countries. And it's a way for us as individuals to say that we're not only disgusted with the way the Israeli government is attacking Palestinians, but we're also disgusted with the way our government is complicit with this, and we as citizens won't just sit by idly and watch this happen with our tax dollars. We will actually put our bodies on the line. So people can do everything from boycotting individual products to supporting the next flotilla, and part of that support is asking your congresspeople to pressure the Israeli government not to attack this flotilla, to let it go safely and enter into the port in Gaza.
If people are interested in finding out more about some of your suggestions, where would they go?
They should sign up at the Code Pink website, codepink.org, and then you'll be getting weekly some examples of what kind of actions that you can take on this issue and other issues related to peace and justice, particularly issues like the ongoing, never-ending wars in Afghanistan and the continued U.S. military presence in Iraq, the drone attacks in Pakistan. But you can find out more about what we're doing and how to help us by going to the website codepink.org.
And we'll have that posted on our blog as well, indiemedialive.blogspot.com. Medea, you're a wife, a mother, an author. How did you come to this work, finally?
Well, a long time ago when I was in high school and saw the U.S. involved in another war at that time in Vietnam, realizing that it didn't make sense to send our soldiers tens of thousands of miles away to kill people we didn't even know for a reason that we couldn't really explain. And unfortunately, I saw it several decades ago, and I'm still seeing that today.
Well, thank you so much for the work that you do, and thank you for being with us on Indie Media Live again. Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, we appreciate it so much. As we wrap up now, just want to play you guys the revolution will not be televised. We're gonna give Gil Scott-Heron a big rest in peace, and thank you so much, Medea.
Thank you, and what a beautiful way to go out.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
The revolution will night fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised. Will not be televised. Not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
On behalf of all the great volunteers at WRIR, thank you, everyone, for listening. Until next week, when my guest will be Steve Northup, the Executive Director of Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, be kind to yourselves, be kind to each other, to the animals, and to the planet. But don't be silent, because silence is the voice of complicity. We wish you peace.